Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we speak with Kevin Hinchey. He's one of the directors of the Wilhelm Reich Infant Trust in Rangeley, Maine, which operates the Wilhelm Reich Museum. We talk with him about the life and work of Wilhelm Reich. But first, let's look at some of the stories in other news. Here's a story that came out last year. The Truth About Hair and Why Indians Would Keep Their Hair Long. This is by Black Elk. Our culture leads people to believe that hairstyle is a matter of fashion and or convenience, and that's how people wear their hair, is simply a cosmetic issue. Back in the Vietnam War, however, an entirely different picture emerged, one that has been carefully covered up and hidden from public view. In the early 90s, Sally, her name changed to protect privacy, was married to a licensed psychologist who worked at a VA medical hospital. The psychologist worked with combat veterans with PTSD. Most of them had served in Vietnam. Sally said, quote, "I remember clearly an evening when my husband came back to our apartment on Dr. Circle, carrying a thick, official-looking folder in his hands. Inside were hundreds of pages of certain studies commissioned by the government. He was in shock from the contents. What he read in those documents completely changed his life. From that moment on, my conservative, middle-of-the-road husband grew his hair and beard and never cut them again. What is more, the VA Medical Center let him do it. And other very conservative men in the staff followed his example. As I read the documents, I learned why. It seemed that during the Vietnam War, special forces in the War Department had sent undercover experts to comb American Indian reservations, looking for talented scouts, for tough young men trained to move stealthily through the rough terrain. They were especially looking for men with outstanding, almost supernatural tracking abilities. Before being approached, these carefully selected men were extensively documented as experts in tracking and survival. Some of these Indian trackers were then enlisted. Once enlisted, an amazing thing happened. Whatever talents and skills they had possessed on the reservation seemed to mysteriously disappear, as recruit after recruit failed to perform as expected in the field. Serious casualties and failures of performance led the government to contract expensive testing of these recruits, and this is what was found. When questioned about their failure to perform as expected, the older recruits replied consistently that when they received their required military haircuts, they could no longer sense the enemy. They could no longer access a sixth sense. Their intuition no longer was reliable. They couldn't read subtle signs as well. They couldn't read subtle signs as well or access subtle extrasensory information. So the Testing Institute recruited more Indian trackers, let them keep their hair long, and tested them in multiple areas. Then they would pair two men together who had received the same scores on all the tests. They would let one man in the pair keep his hair long and gave the other man a military haircut. Then the two men retook the tests. The man with the long hair kept making high scores, time after time. The man with the short hair failed the tests in which he had previously scored high scores. The typical test went like this. The recruit is sleeping out in the woods. An armed enemy approaches the sleeping man. The long-haired man is awakened out of his sleep by a strong sense of danger and gets away long before the enemy is close, long before any sounds from the approaching enemy are audible. In another version of this test, the long-haired man senses an approach and somehow intuits that the enemy will perform a physical attack. He follows his sixth sense and stays still, pretending to be sleeping, but quickly grabs the attacker and kills him as the attacker reaches down to strangle him. The same man, after having passed these and other tests, then received a military haircut and consistently failed these tests and many other tests that he had previously passed. The article continues, "The mammalian body has evolved over millions of years. Survival skills of human and animal at times seem almost supernatural. Science is constantly coming up with more discoveries about the amazing abilities of man and animal to survive. Each part of the body has highly sensitive work to perform for the survival and well-being of the body as a whole. The body has a reason for every part of itself. Hair is an extension of the nervous system. It can be correctly seen as exteriorized nerves, a type of highly evolved feelers or antenna that transmit vast amounts of important information to the brainstem, the limbic system, and the neocortex. Not only does hair in people, include facial hair in men, provide an information highway reaching the brain, hair also emits energy, the electromagnetic energy emitted by the brain into the outer environment. This has been seen in Kirlian photography when a person is photographed with long hair, then re-photographed after the hair is cut. When hair is cut, receiving and sending transmissions to and from the environment are greatly hampered. Earlier this year, we talked with Dr. Konstantin Kordkov about measuring etheric energy in orgone energy. Dr. Kordkov has scientifically measured it with electrophotonics, and it's based on the gas discharge visualization technique. As many listeners may know, orgone energy was discovered by Wilhelm Reich. It's been described as a massless, omnipresent substance that can coalesce to create organization on all scales. Within the microscopic, Reich called them bions, and the macroscopic structures would be clouds and even galaxies. Wilhelm Reich also constructed what was known as cloudbusters. He called it cosmic orgone engineering. We talk about that and his life with guest Kevin Hinchey. Kevin is one of the directors of the Wilhelm Reich Infant Trust in Rangeley, Maine, which operates the Wilhelm Reich Museum. Kevin also manages Reich's medical and scientific archives, located at the Countway Library of Medicine at Harvard University. He has written and produced the documentary A Man's Right to Know, a rare look into Wilhelm Reich's life, and the film is complemented by archived footage and photos. Kevin is currently writing a full-length documentary film about Reich, and he recently completed a syllabus for a one-semester college course about the life and work of Wilhelm Reich. Kevin Hinchey, welcome to Another News.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Well, there's a lot of content about Wilhelm Reich on the internet, and I wanted to ask you, how reliable would you say this is?
Yeah, it's a good question, and I say this with some sadness and some concern and a lot of frustration. I would say most of the internet content about Wilhelm Reich is unreliable, factually incorrect, and I say that whether the content is being created by Reich's detractors, of which there are many, or it's being created by Reich's admirers. There's just a tremendous amount of factual, historic inaccuracy about Reich, which I find particularly frustrating because there are 23 books by Reich publicly available, plus his published research journals and bulletins from the 40s and 50s. There's over 7,000 pages of Reich's own writings publicly available, and I wish people would go to those resources to find, you know, factually accurate information about Reich's life and work rather than on the internet.
Well, then let me ask you, what would you suggest if listeners would like to learn more about Wilhelm Reich? Where could they go?
Well, there are 23 book titles by Reich available. Matter of fact, just this month we came out with the 23rd one that we produced with the publisher for our Strauss and Giroux called Where's the Truth? It's a collection of his journals and letters from the last part of his life. I'm often asked that. I would say if someone wanted to begin reading about Reich, the books that I would recommend, there's a wonderful book called Reich Speaks of Freud, which is actually the first book I ever read about Reich when I was 18. And it's the transcript of a 1952 interview that he did with the Freud Archives. And so it's a two- or three-day interview that he did where he basically explains his life and work, and I think it's a great introduction to Reich's life and work in his own writings. There's also a wonderful book called Selected Writings, which came out in 1960, which is a compilation of excerpts from his books and his research journals and bulletins published by Farrar, Straus, and Giroux, still in print. And it was created really as an introduction to his work by putting together a compilation of these materials. The other book I might recommend was his first American book, written and published in 1942, which was really a summation of his work in Europe called Function of the Orgasm, which is really an excellent scientific biography. So those might be the three initial ones that I would recommend written by Reich. And like I say, there's 20 other books, but I think those are a good introduction.
It seems there's so much to learn about his work, and it's very detailed and complex, and I could understand how people can get it wrong if they just have a cursory understanding of it. But can you tell listeners what exactly is Orgone Energy?
Yeah, that's a big question, but it's really one of the most important questions, because it's what most people will, whether they admire him or whether they don't, what they will associate Wilhelm Reich with. It's a physical energy, a real energy, a biological energy in living substances in the human body, and also an atmospheric energy. And Reich discovered it in laboratory experiments in Europe in the 1930s. He first discovered this radiation in small microorganisms in January of 1939. And after he emigrated to America, he arrived here a few days before World War II broke out, he later discovered the same energy in the atmosphere. And it was a physical energy. We're not talking about something metaphysical or physical. We're not talking about an idea. We're talking about something that can be seen and measured and verified and even used. It finds its roots because Reich started his career as a psychoanalyst studying and working with Sigmund Freud in Vienna in the 1930s. He was a graduate of the University of Medical School. And one of the things that attracted him to Freud's work while Reich was still in medical school was the idea of the libido, the sexual energy. And for a while in his life, Freud, who was the father of psychoanalysis, actually talked about the libido as a physical, biological energy, not as just an idea of an actual energy within the human body. And Reich found this idea very attractive, and he was able to verify this later in laboratory experiments. So Orgone Energy's roots go back to Freud's concept of the libido, which Freud eventually abandoned. Orgone Energy is a biological energy in living substances. It is the sexual energy, as well as other properties, in the human organism, and it's also an atmospheric energy. And Reich would later, you know, after many, many years of research, would come to think of it actually as a life energy.
Can you tell listeners a little bit more about Wilhelm Reich as the person? Because you had produced and directed and written a wonderful 30-minute documentary. I don't think a lot of people have seen this. It's called A Man's Right to Know. What did you discover about Reich in this documentary?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for the compliment. That was something that I wrote and produced for the Wilhelm Reich Museum about 10 years ago. Now I'm working on a full-length documentary, 90-to-100-minute one. What I discovered and how I would summarize Reich is he was a research physician and scientist who began his career as a psychoanalyst and psychiatrist in Vienna and Berlin in the 1920s and 1930s. And he really felt that Freud's original conception of the libido as a real physical, biological energy was something that he wanted to explore. And based on his clinical work, his clinical psychiatric and psychoanalytic work, he felt that this was a real biological energy with numerous properties in the human body. And he wanted to explore this further in the laboratory because he wanted to know, what kind of energy is this? Is it electrical? Does it have other properties to it? He was a research physician and scientist experimenting with human subjects, experimenting on the most basic biological level to find out more about this energy in the body and in living substances. And as a research physician and scientist, his research ultimately took him into areas that he had not anticipated. It took him into the areas of cancer research, cellular research, experimental treatment of cancer, And later on, it would even take him into the area of weather experimentation. So to sum him up, I always call him a research physician and scientist with roots in psychoanalysis and psychiatry.
In your documentary, you wrote that he had moved to New York City. He left the beginning of the Nazi rise to power and fascism in Germany and moved to New York City. And there he had a nice home. Where did he move? In Queens?
He lived in the Forest Hill sections of Queens, part of New York City. And the reason he chose that area, and he rented a house at first and later he bought one, there's very much of a country-like atmosphere to Forest Hills. And that was kind of the environment that he preferred. And he was only a half hour by subway ride to Manhattan, where he was also teaching at the New School for Social Research.
That's right. And then on to, at some point, he was looking at Maine, an area up in Rangeley, Maine.
Yes.
Can you tell listeners a little bit about that place and what it is today?
Yes. Reich's association with Rangeley, Maine is really kind of a function of an accident. He emigrated from Oslo to New York. He arrived here 4 days before the outbreak of World War II, and he had a teaching position lined up at the New School for Social Research. And about a year later, in 1940, he and the woman who would become his American wife went on a camping trip to the White Mountains of New Hampshire, because he was very much of an outdoors person, loved the outdoors. They got caught in a tremendous rainstorm. And they ended up getting into the car and just driving over the border and ended up in this area called Rangeley Lakes, Maine. So it was really strictly by accident. He rented a cabin there along a lake called Musilukmagunctic Lake, which is a beautiful large lake. And it was actually there where he discovered orgone energy in the atmosphere. He had already discovered it earlier on in Oslo in January of 1930, in these small microorganisms, which he was viewing through high-powered microscopes, and he was using time-lapse filming to document all of this. He discovered the same energy in the atmosphere in July of 1940. And he had always really wondered where this energy in these microorganisms came from. It seemed to originate in the atmosphere as this ubiquitous, mass-free energy in the atmosphere. And his discovery of atmospheric orgone energy really revolutionized the research that he was doing into diseases, into the treatment of diseases, and into other things, because it led ultimately to a greater use of a device that he invented called the orgone energy accumulator.
Right there is a very important milestone, I believe, and it really caught the attention of the federal government as well. Before the FDA came down on him, he was experimenting with the accumulator, I believe, and trying to heal people. But can you describe what is the accumulator? How does it work?
Yes, and that's a key question when someone is talking about Reich's legacy, because I would say it is largely disinformation and misunderstanding about the accumulator, both from his detractors and admirers, I think, which has produced, I think, the most damaging narratives about Reich. So to talk about Reich, you need to talk about the orgone energy accumulator. And the orgone energy accumulator is essentially a modified Faraday cage. And a Faraday cage is quite simply a metal-lined enclosure which keeps electromagnetic energy out. It was invented in 1836 by Michael Faraday, and it's used regularly by scientists. And Reich had discovered in Oslo this seemingly new form of radiation in these microorganisms, he wanted to know, what kind of energy is this? Is it electrical? So he started using Faraday cages with cultures of these microorganisms to kind of isolate the energy. And by using the Faraday cage, he pretty much ruled out the idea that this was simply electromagnetism. By using the Faraday cage with these microorganisms and still seeing and feeling this radiation, he basically concluded that this was a different kind of radiation. And so from January or February of 1939 to around October of 1940, when he's in America, he's experimenting with Faraday cages, and based on further experiments, he's starting to modify the cage and add other external materials which will hold in this radiation, essentially holds in this new form of radiation, which he was calling orgone radiation. Mm-hmm. And once he discovers orgone energy in the atmosphere, he realizes that these orgone energy accumulators can gather and hold in the energy from the atmosphere. And he starts to use some of these devices on cancer mice because he's been experimenting with cancer cells and he's been doing cellular research, and he starts to use small, what he calls orgone energy accumulators, to see their effects on mice with cancer. And he starts to see that they have some effects on the tumors, that in fact the tumors can soften and even eventually be eliminated. And so based on these extensive experiments with mice, Reich eventually builds large accumulators, large enough for a person to sit in, and in March of 1941, he starts to do experiments with terminal cancer patients sitting in orgone energy accumulators. Now, this brings up a lot of misconceptions about Reich. Another one of the distortions about it is that Reich was claiming he could cure cancer. He never made this claim. Mm-hmm. In fact, he, in many instances in his published work, he said, I don't have a cure here. He said, there are some promising results. Sometimes tumors will soften. Sometimes they will disappear. But he did not think that this was a cure. He felt that cancer was not a tumor. Cancer was a decaying process in the body. The other misconception about the orgone energy accumulators is that they were some sort of sexual device. And this is something that a lot of people believed while he was alive, detractors and admirers. It is probably the most persistent distortion today about Reich, that the orgone energy accumulators were some sort of a sex box, some sort of orgasmatron. In fact, a book came out last year that had that word in the title. And so this is, you know, kind of a great distortion. Mm-hmm. So the combination, when Reich was alive, of experimental cancer treatment, misconceptions that this was a cancer cure, misconceptions that this was some sort of sex box, attracted the attention of the Food and Drug Administration. And they eventually spent years and years and years to put an end to his work, thinking that he was simply a medical and scientific quack.
And you had pointed out in your documentary that the initial attack from an article by a woman named Mildred Brady had challenged the FDA to go after him.
Yes, that's right. This was an article that appeared in New Republic magazine in May of 1947. The article was entitled The Strange Case of Wilhelm Reich. And it's filled with kind of a mixture of fact and inaccuracies. And that's probably the first time in print where someone was writing that the orgone accumulator was a way for someone to achieve some sort of sexual satisfaction. That found its way into print. Mm. And by the end of the article, she had essentially challenged the medical and psychoanalytic communities to do something about this man. The article comes out in May of 1947. I believe it was in July of that same year, where someone brought it to the attention of someone in the Food and Drug Administration. And based on that, several weeks later, in August of 1947, unannounced, an FDA agent showed up at Reich's home and research center in Rangeley, Maine, which is now the Wilhelm Reich Museum. But this was his home and research center in Rangeley, Maine, and began asking questions about his work. That was August of 1947, and they would continue their efforts, essentially believing he was a quack, to put an end to his work. And this culminated in 1954 in a complaint for injunction against Reich's work, seeking to stop his rental and sale of Oregon Energy accumulators, and also to stop the circulation of all of his literature, which they felt was labeling and promotion for what they felt was a fraudulent device, the Oregon Energy accumulator.
In your documentary, the last quote of at the end of Reich mentions a distortion in thinking about scientific principles, and the quote is, "In the course of the history of science, it always happens that true facts are either distorted or flattened out. The danger of distortion is particularly true in the case of ergonomy, and I'm willing to fight with all my strength and everything I've got to prevent such a distortion of our principles." Can you elaborate on what he's talking about?
I'm not going to pretend with any precision to know exactly what Reich is talking about there, but I think I can take some very well-educated guesses here. He was very conversant and very knowledgeable about certain episodes in the history of science, and I've learned a great deal just in terms of the research that I've done. The history of science is filled with people like Reich. I don't mean in terms of his work, but just in terms of his pioneering spirit, constantly running up against sort of the more traditional scientific institutions and people, not just being marginalized, not just being criticized, but actually being vilified, where people simply don't want to listen to anything new. Reich ran across this in the psychoanalytic community. It wasn't that people just disagreed with some of his theories. He was actually personally vilified. He was accused of being insane. He was accused of being psychotic. These are rumors that started back in the 1930s, 1920s and 1930s in Europe, and preceded him to America. They were all, these rumors about Reich were already in America by the time he got here. So he ran up against this kind of vilification in the psychiatric and psychoanalytic communities when he was doing his early cancer research and early biological research in the 1930s. He ran up against it from the medical and cancer communities in Europe. He constantly saw pioneering work marginalized and vilified. And he also ran across this in his political activities. He was very involved in the left-wing movements of the 1920s and 30s, which were fighting against authoritarianism and Nazism. He wrote a classic book in 1933, still considered a classic today, called The Mass Psychology of Fascism. But he was eventually, because he criticized his own parties, and for a number of other reasons, he was eventually expelled from the left-wing movements. His books were also condemned by the Nazis. So he came to really not want to be involved in anything politically for those reasons, and he wanted to stick strictly to pure scientific research. So I think in that statement, what he's talking about there is he saw how his own work, starting with his work in psychoanalysis and psychiatry, starting with his work in biology and cancer research, starting and then continuing on to his experimental work with cancer patients and weather engineering, he was constantly running up against sort of traditional authorities. That statement that you read there, which we used in that small documentary, was made at some point in the 1950s. It was while the Food and Drug Administration's campaign against him was well underway, and it was probably made a couple years before they actually issued their complaint of injunction. And so Reich saw how his work was constantly being misunderstood, distorted, certainly by toward the end of his life, which is when that quote comes. That quote is just a few years, you know, before he ends up in prison and death. He's just sticking to his principles about his work, about sticking to the principles of his scientific work.
Kevin Hinchey, one of the directors of the Wilhelm Reich Infant Trust in Rangeley, Maine. You're also working on a full-length documentary film. Are you ready to take calls?
I am. I'm very eager to take some phone calls.
If you have a comment or question for Kevin Hinchey about this interview, you can call us at 212-209-2900, and we'll be right back after this break. Listening to Another News, I'm Jeff Brady. Our guest is Kevin Hinchey. He is the director, one of the directors of the Wilhelm Reichenfin Trust in Rangeley, Maine, and the producer and director of the short documentary film, A Man's Right to Know, about the life and work of Wilhelm Reich. We're going to go to the first call. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, I have a couple of questions. Was any of Mr. Reich's scientific research, was any of it peer-reviewed? And secondly, what can the man tell us about Reich's involvement with a retreat that I believe was in the New York area called Summer Hill, I believe it was called, where children were encouraged to, very young children were encouraged to engage in sexual activity with one another and with the teachers. What can he tell us about that? Thank you.
I'd be happy to answer your question. First, I'd like to ask you a question. Have you actually read anything by Wilhelm Reich?
He hung up, Kevin.
Oh, he did. Mm-hmm. Okay. The caller asked about peer review. He also, much of Reich's work, almost all of Reich's work has been duplicated. In terms of peer review, I guess you could look into how the FDA allegedly peer reviewed it. But if you were to look at the FDA files, which I have and which are available to anyone from the Freedom of Information Act, you'll see that when the FDA went to numerous people to look into Reich's work, the bias against Reich's work was so strong from the beginning. So that's about all I want to say about that. In terms of Summer Hill, the caller is completely mistaken about everything he said about Summer Hill. Summer Hill was a school in England, not in New York. It was founded by a man named A.S. Neal, who in fact was a colleague and friend of Reich's. The idea that students were encouraged at a young age to engage in sexual activities among themselves and with teachers is completely false. And so when I hear from callers like this, this is exactly part of the problem. People who are not reading primary materials. If this caller had read anything by Reich or by A.S. Neal, a colleague of Reich's, he would have never made a statement like that.
Kevin, thanks for clearing that up. I really appreciate that. And as you pointed out earlier in the interview, this is one of the major problems of Wilhelm Reich's work and not too dissimilar from Nikola Tesla. We're going to go to another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Okay. I'm Croatian extraction, and I have a memory of a long, long time ago when I was young, you know, maybe 30 or 40 years ago, seeing a Croatian documentary. Not wasn't a documentary, it was kind of an avant-garde film called W.R. and the Orgone or Organism.
Mysteries, W.R. Mysteries of the Organism. W.R.
Right,
Mysteries
right.
of the Organism. Yeah.
And
right.
What category would you... It was such a bizarre film. What category would you put that in terms of... What sort of statement were they making, and mm-hmm. were they fabricating things? Because
okay,
among other things, they had a few different storylines, and one of them was groupies making plaster casts of the penises yeah. of musicians.
Yeah, you have a good memory. Thank
yeah.
you for asking that. That's a good question. The caller is referring to a film which I don't like to talk about, but I will, because it's an excellent question and gives me a chance to clarify some things. This was a film made back in the early 70s by a Yugoslavian filmmaker named Dusan Makavejev. It's called W.R. Mysteries of the Organism. And this is before my time at the Wilhelm Reich Infant Trust. But he approached the Wilhelm Reich Infant Trust and numerous people, saying that he was making a documentary film about Reich for German television. So many, many people cooperated with this man. It's part documentary and part fictional story. In fact, the trust did give this man a tremendous amount of original materials in terms of film and things like that, thinking that this man was making a legitimate documentary about Reich. There was also a semi-pornographic story going along with it, which showed rather explicit sexual scenes. It was more or less trying to be some sort of commentary, a lot about Reich's early political work and how he kind of mingled sex politics and European politics of his day. I find it's a complete distortion of Reich's work. The people at the Trust, once they went to a screening of this work, were absolutely appalled, consulted our attorney. Again, this is before my involvement at the Trust. Consulted the attorney and had all references to the Wilhelm Reich Infant Trust removed from the credits of the film, because I think this was an appalling representation of Reich's work. And it points out one of the projects that I'm working on. I am currently writing a full-length documentary film. I've been writing it for well over a year, in which every single fact is correct, and in which there will be a coherent narrative of Reich. This film, W.R. Mysteries of the Organism, as the caller correctly points out, is a rather strange film, but this filmmaker's other works are equally strange, and he took the same kind of oddball approach to other subject matters. So it's kind of a sore point with us at the Trust. But I'm glad, for the question and a chance to kind of clarify that.
Well, I appreciate you clarifying that, and that's what is needed, and that's why you're on the show this evening. We're going to go to another call. Hi, you're on the air?
Yeah, hello, how are you doing?
Good.
I had a question for you, Jess, specifically to the work of Dr. Reich. Has anyone picked up the work and tried to continue it legitimately? And or do any of the devices that he built to collect his organ energy, do they still exist? Do plans for them exist? If someone was interested in the work, how would they go about getting legitimate information and pursuing it?
Good. Those are all good questions. Yes, since Reich's death in 1957, there have been a variety of people who were pursuing various aspects of the work. A lot of these people doing it, whether they're physicians, psychologists or biologists and everything, I have found, quite honestly, many of them very problematic. I think, I don't want to mention any names, and again, this is just my opinion. But as I said earlier on, all aspects of his work have been replicated. whether you're talking about his biological work or his work with weather engineering, his work with orgone accumulators. I assume that the caller, when he mentions devices, is probably talking about the orgone energy accumulator, which was Reich's principal medical and scientific tool, perhaps a cloudbuster he's talking about. At the Wilhelm Reich Infant Trust website, if I may shamelessly promote myself here.
Oh, please do.
Thanks. But at our website, we talk about the museum that we have. We talk about the archives. We talk about our museum bookstore. So you can order all of Reich's books are available through our bookstore. There are, most of Reich's books are also available through Amazon. You can find used copies and everything. We also we also have reprints of materials that no one else has, because we have the rights to these materials. So, for example, the published research bulletins and journals, which he published during his time from 1942 to around 1955, and these materials were banned and burned by the United States government in the 1950s, but all copies, but copies of all these materials still exist. And we do sell plans. If someone wants to make an orgone energy accumulator, you could also find information about it in some of Reich's books, such as Cancer Biopathy. So our website is www.wilhelmreichtrust.org. And go to that website and go to the bookstore and just take some time and look through all the various materials there.
But as far as with his research pertaining specifically to the biological with the cancer.
Oh, okay. Excellent question. People have done it sporadically over the years, but not enough doctors. And I don't think, and this is an area of work that is of particular interest to me. It may be one of the reasons why, I mean, I first started reading Reich about 40 years ago when I was 18, and it was really his medical and scientific work that really caught my attention. And so when you talk about the cancer research, you're talking about numerous things. You're talking about biological research, of cellular research in cancer cells. You're talking about the Reich blood tests. Reich actually developed a series of blood tests whereby looking at blood under powerful microscopes by certain microorganisms in there, you could actually detect the cancer process in the human body, in the tissue, prior to the manifestation of tumors. And then there was the experimental treatment of cancer patients using orgone accumulators. Very few people over the years have gotten involved in this work, probably because look at what happened to Reich. You know, the FDA went after him, the American Medical Association went after him, the American Psychoanalytic Psychiatric Association went after him. His books were banned and burned by the government, and he died in a federal prison, which put a tremendous scare into his students and colleagues at the time. And consequently, there's been a great disruption in his work. So you might have small pockets of people doing this. And it is a legitimate question to ask, how competent are these people? How well documented are their results?
Pertaining specifically to Dr. Reich, did he get any concrete results in the limited time that he had before he was
Absolutely.
To
have you read anything by Wilhelm Reich?
No, actually, this is the first I've ever heard of him. That's why I'm asking.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, good. Then definitely at some point, go to the website and just look through the bookstore. Yes, his work was painstakingly documented. He published, we have about 23 book titles by Reich. There are over 7,000 pages of Reich's own writings that are currently available, you know, that are currently available. And so his cancer research was documented in numerous publications. The principal one would be his book, The Cancer Biopathy. There's also a wonderful publication, one of my favorites. It's about 60 pages long, which is about the Reich blood tests, called Organomic Diagnosis of the Cancer Biopathy. and numerous other publications. So his work was very, very well documented in published materials while he's alive, and in his archives, which are at a medical library at Harvard, his laboratory notebooks, you know, are there to be studied. But what I would urge you to do again is go to our website and go to the bookstore section and just look through some of the titles. And in all of the titles that we have, we also offer on PDF files like the introductions and opening chapters of all the books. So you'd actually have an opportunity to actually read some things online in some PDF files.
Thank you very much, Ed, for those questions.
Yeah, good question.
We're going to go to the next call. Hi, you're on the air with Kevin Hinchey.
Hi, good evening, gentlemen. Very good work, Kevin, and excellent show, Jeff.
Thank you.
I'm interested in argon energy, and I do have a couple of pieces of argon around my apartment. But is there any such thing as a dark argon energy?
Okay.
You know what, Kevin? I actually don't want to go into this, and I think he mentioned deadly argon energy.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Can you maybe answer what is deadly argon energy?
Okay, that's a good question. Deadly argon energy, and Reich liked to use, he liked to use acronyms, and he liked to use sometimes abbreviations, so he would sometimes abbreviate that as DOR, deadly argon energy. And what Reich is referring to there is stagnant energy, whether it's stagnant energy in the human body or stagnant argon energy in the atmosphere. And one of the principles of argon energy is it needs, it in the human organism, but even in the atmosphere, it needs to keep moving.
Hmm.
You know, it needs to keep moving. And one of the goals of the therapy that he developed, I guess you might call it psychiatric argon therapy or anything like that, was to remove various armor blocks in the body which would impede the free flow of energy in the human body. And he was also doing that with his weather engineering in terms of mass-free energy in the atmosphere. So, again, deadly argon energy is stagnant energy that sort of becomes, in the human body, it becomes bound up. It becomes bound up in the muscular armor in the body and the rigidities of the body. And the same thing can happen actually happen in the atmosphere, especially. And he was doing his weather engineering work in the 1950s. And it could especially become stagnant in the atmosphere if it came into contact, say, with nuclear energy, whether it was, you know, fallout from the nuclear tests that were being done out west or things like that.
Oh, that's incredible. Wow.
Yeah, so that's what deadly argon energy is about in the human organism and also in the atmosphere.
Well, thanks very much for explaining that. Enjoy listening, and I wish you the best of luck in your project.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Enjoy the night.
Thank you, caller. Appreciate those questions. Hi, you're on the air with Kevin Hinchey.
Hello. My name is William, and I just want to thank Jeff. You got a great program. Great program.
Oh, thank you.
Mr. Hickey,
Hinchey.
Thank you for continuing Dr. Reich's work. It seems to be indicative of everything else that's going on and people really learning, you know,
how the government
kind of gets in the way of things. And it does impede a lot of research. So I love your website.
Thank you.
No, it's fantastic. No, just keep it going because, you know, I'm just overjoyed. I can't even tell you how happy I am that y'all are having this conversation.
Great.
About Reich all the time, man. And nobody knows what I'm talking about. So and I go, oh, go to their website. But they don't believe. And I've come to know that there are different, there are two kinds of people. There are believers and knowers.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
And I, you know what I'm saying. So I have to finish that one, right?
Yeah.
So, look, I'm not going to take up any of your time. I just thank you. God bless you. And keep it up.
All right. Thank you very much for those comments. I just want to make a few comments on your comments. In terms of what I do, I never think I'm carrying on Reich's work because I'm not a scientist and I'm not a physician and I'm not a researcher or anything like
that.
My background is in writing and film, and so I think the service that I'm providing, but I think it's a valuable service, is in all my duties at the trust as a director, I think I'm able to sort of call upon my background in writing and in film, because I am really focused on the narrative of Reich, because I really feel that there are so many distorted public narratives of Reich, which
emanate... the one you alluded to, that I call it. That was the weirdest thing I've ever seen.
You may think it's the weirdest thing you've ever seen. We get this all the time. We really do. It gets depressing, so we have to maintain a sense of humor.
Yeah,
but
I couldn't even see the whole thing. It was like,
yeah,
come on.
We hear this stuff all the time. We've heard much worse. I don't even want to go into the things that we hear, whether it's people calling us with oddball questions or people who visit the museum and make absolutely ridiculous comments. People who come to our conferences, it's what you're talking about, believers and knowers, and the people who know the least seem to talk the most, you know?
My profession, I'm a massage therapist, but I'm into a lot of different things, ionic cleanse, and you know, I talk to my clients about, you know, Wilhelm Reich, because it's been like a hobby of mine, you know? I never built an accumulator or anything like that, because I don't know if I really want to go into that, because I'm involved with ion cleanse right now. Yeah. But I'm telling you, man. His meticulousness, and I read the blood book. I call it the blood book. I'm sorry.
Oh, the ergonomic diagnosis of cancer
exactly.
myopathy. Yeah, what a great pamphlet, isn't it? It's
Bible,
unbelievable.
Man. It's the Bible. It's the Bible. It's another way of looking at things, but they don't want to do it. So you know.
Yeah, yeah. Now, as a massage therapist, I don't know if you've read any excerpts from Character Analysis. That's his really classic book about therapeutic technique.
Oh, yeah.
But the best chapter there that I always refer to, and it's a difficult book. I mean, it took me years to read it, you know, when I was very young. But the best chapter in there that really, really sums up his mind-body therapy is a chapter called The Expressive Language of the Living.
I love it.
And yeah, and in that chapter, he goes into the various armor segments in the body, the rigidities where, you know where the energy gets bound up. And it's such a beautifully written chapter.
Well, I tell you what, it helped me. I started into Reich when I was 18. I just turned 58. And
I'm the same way. I'm 58, and I started exactly 40 years ago this month when I was 18.
Oh, congratulations. It's like an anniversary, yo.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, look, thank you so much for your, vicissitude and all those fancy words about stick-intuitiveness, man.
Well, thank you very
much.
Whatever
you're bringing to it, just keep it going, man. I hope have some acolytes, because it's such important work.
Okay, well, listen, stay in touch and send us a message at our website, you know? Say hi every now and then.
Thank you, caller. What a great call. We have about 5 more calls on the line. I don't think we're going to get to all of them.
Wow.
But we'll go to the next call. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm fascinated by this. I'm also just turned 58, and I learned about Reich 40 years ago.
Wow.
Amazing.
It's unbelievable. I'm in good company here.
I'm sorry, what's your guest name? I forgot. First name?
It's Kevin Hinchy.
Kevin. Hello, Kevin.
Hi.
I got 2 questions for you.
Yes.
This woman gave me a book by Reich. She loaned it to me, and I'm so sorry I gave it back to her 40 years ago. It was called Listen, Little Man.
Yes.
And it was the most amazing book I ever read.
Yes.
But the thing is, it's been so many years ago, I can't exactly remember what it was about. Do you have that one?
I do, but give me your second question, and I'll answer them both.
Okay, second question is, now this one I'm not sure about. She told me that you can see orgone energy, like on a rainy day, if you're in a car driving down like a highway, you can see like a wavy line or a blurry line right after a rainstorm. It's kind of like an energy that you can see. Is that true?
Okay, let me take your first question. Listen, Little Man is a book that Reich wrote, and you know, if you're really interested in getting it, you could buy a new copy through a bookstore. But if you go online to some of these, you know, just used booksellers, you could probably pick up a copy for a couple of bucks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Reich's shortest book, actually. It's about 134 pages, but or 132, I forget. But about 34 pages of it are drawings by the famous cartoonist and children's book author William Steig, who was a famous New Yorker cartoonist. He's also the man who created Shrek. He wrote the original book Shrek, and he was a patient, a personal friend of Reich's, and was very involved in helping raise funds for Reich's legal fund. And he illustrated the book. And what it really is it's kind of a rant by Reich. It's not a scientific book. It's not a sociological book. He's really just expressing a lot of feelings about a as a scientist who really is being not only misunderstood, he's being marginalized and he's being vilified. It's a very easy book to read, but it's very intense. And it's and I think it's great that you still still remember it. So you should have no problem getting a copy of that. In terms of Orgone Energy, yes, you can see Orgone Energy. I have poor eyesight, so I don't always rely on the things I can see. But if you know what you're looking for, you can see it. But I don't think after a rainstorm is the best time, because the best times really to see kind of Orgone Energy is when the sky is blue and there's low humidity.
You're absolutely right about that.
Yeah, low humidity. And when there's a lot of humidity, when there's a lot of humidity and it's raining, all Orgone Energy functions in terms of experiments are not as intense. But a lot of times, if you look in the sky, and again, I don't see this as the strong point in terms of Orgone Energy phenomenon, again, because I have bad eyesight, and I sometimes wonder, well, what's subjective and that type of thing. But yes, you sometimes can see waves or small little, they look like microorganisms just kind of moving around. But
Kevin, we've run out of time.
I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. Caller, thank you very much for
those great
questions. And if the callers who are holding right now want to get a hold of you, how do they do that?
Well, I can just give you the email address of the website in terms of the email. It's WREICH, W Reich, at Rangeley, RANGELEY. org.
Okay, Kevin, we got to wrap things up. I want to thank you very much for really sticking to this and preserving Reich's work and the truth about his work. We really appreciate it. And we want to have you back on again. Thank you very much.
I'd love to. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity, Jeff. Okay.
Have a wonderful evening.
You too.
That's going to do it for us. We're going to be back next week, Monday, 10 p.m.
And it is 11 p.m. Coming up in the half hour, a rebroadcast of today's news from the WBAI news team. But right now it is time for Health Action. This is WBAI New York.